This hour of the Tom and Curly Show is brought to you by Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Tom and Curly aren't out. They're out today. I'm G. Scott, filling in. And I got Brother Mace, Aaron Mason.
What's up? It's Cairo Knights Takeover. Hey.
We're from Cairo Knights. Our show's from 7 to 10 right here on this station, and we're doing our best to handle the Tom and Curly. There's a lot of gadgets, a lot of moving parts, and we're trying not to make the producer, Jacob, nervous.
Some big shoes to fill.
Big shoes to fill. In the news, Mace, what do you got?
Oh, yeah. So there is an interesting one of the candidates in the primary election this year that did really, really well, sort of the biggest shock of the election, is Germe Zahile. He is he's Ethiopian. His parents were refugees in the 1980s. They immigrated to South Seattle. His mom working double shifts, nursing assistant. He ends up moving around all over the place. Goes to Stanford, majors in biology, does all this stuff, and realizes, you know what? I'm going to run for office to try and make where I live a better place, because he loves it here. And the reason this is shocking is because he's running against Larry Gossett. Now, Larry Gossett has been on the King County Council for a quarter century, and Zahile is leading Gossett 55% to 38%. So in eight general elections, Gossett has never received less than 80% of the vote. Now, he represents a district that includes the U District and Capitol Hill, the Central District, Southeast Seattle. So another thing that's unusual about this is Zahile really admires Gossett. He calls him an inspiration because Gossett has been doing a lot of good work, especially in the arena of civil rights, the entire, 25 plus years that he's been in office. So people were pretty shocked to see this up and comer, this first timer, do so well against someone who is not only beloved, but also firmly entrenched in his position for a long time. But he put on his shoes, he knocked on some doors, he talked to his community, and it turns out that works.
We've learned the lesson by AOC and what she did in the way that she campaigned.
Yes, very similar
right?
situation.
And you're seeing a similar situation of him going door to door. As someone who used to do door-to-door sales,
yeah.
The reason why I was brought here to the Seattle area 20 years ago is because I did door-to-door sales. When you actually, like, it's one thing people say, like, in some industries, you cold call. So if you want to be an insurance agent,
right.
You might cold call. If you work for to get gym memberships or car dealerships, you might cold call. And, well, you might make some phone calls, take a coffee break, 10 minutes, make about 5 minutes of phone call, take another break for 30 minutes. When you are going door to door, right, yes, the negativity that you receive is much higher. You're going to get a lot of get away from here.
Right.
You're going to get a lot of no soliciting. You get a lot of nobody opens a door. You get a lot of those things or might get the police called on you. However, when you're doing that and you're doing that organically and you knock on that door and no one answers and you leave that card and you go to the next door, first of all, people are nosy. Everybody has a nosy neighbor.
Right.
So they see people out in the neighborhood. So even though someone might not have opened that door, they look out and they're like, that guy's walking through the neighborhood. Hey, Sally, did you who was that? And they say, that was this candidate.
Yeah.
Oh. And so when they get ready to go vote, who's on their mind?
Yeah.
So when it's organically done, this is the way things are done.
Now, this isn't in this particular article, the Seattle Times, that I'm going off of right now. But I remember reading something just the other day that talked about this. And they interviewed a 70-year-old woman who encountered him while he was walking around. And before Zahile could even say anything, she was like, hey, you got my vote. Like, don't worry about it. And he's like, really? She's like, yeah, I'm 70 years old. I have no problem with Gossett. Like, he's great, but he's been here for a long time. He's been doing this, and I think it's time to pass the torch. We need some new blood. And this is a 70-year-old woman saying that. So a lot of changes afoot.
Why did you tell me that story?
Why?
Not why did you tell him. So I wish almost you wouldn't have told me that story.
Yeah.
Especially, it's like if you let's just say you're doing your job, you're doing everything you're supposed to do, right?
Uh-huh.
And your employer, your boss says, "Hey, Aaron Mason is doing his job. Jacob is doing his job. Nothing's wrong. But we just need new blood." But nothing was wrong.
Yeah.
But you just need new blood. I would hate to lose my job because new blood was needed. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, sure. So. But when you've got a city like Seattle that has the problems that it has, I think a lot of us would agree that folks that have been sort of doing this for a long time haven't quite hit on any meaningful solutions quite yet for a lot of these problems.
That ain't what that 70-year-old lady said. The 70-year-old lady said, Goss is fine. He's okay, but we need new blood. All right. I had to get a little laugh in before we talk about this. Next one is kind of serious. As you know, in the news on Wednesday, 680 undocumented immigrants were detained. Now, the good news is 300 of those, this doesn't really make it in the news, but 300 of those have been released since then. Mm-hmm. So they were released yesterday on Thursday. Something interesting in there was 18 of those were juveniles found working at the plant. Hmm. And one of them was as young as 14 years old.
Wow.
At one of
in
these
a food
plants.
Processing plant?
Mm-hmm.
That is, if it's not the, it's almost the most dangerous job in America. It's like crab fishing and food processing plants.
Don't tell me you have a job at food processing
plants. No, it's one of the only jobs I haven't had.
Just so you know, Mace's had a job doing everything. But some of the blowback has been like some of these, like normal kids during, kids going off to school, going off to daycare, and come to find out they're not getting picked up by mom or dad because mom or dad has been taken away.
Right.
There was a little girl who tearfully was talking to reporters after her parents were taken in that ICE raid.
A little student is crying because of their daddy, mom, missing. I don't want my dad. No, the Hispanic people are not doing nothing bad. They're not stealing nothing. The immigrants just went just inside the company, just get our dads out of there. That's not fair, immigrants. Yeah. I just see what I'm doing. I'm crying because of my dad. I have a lot of heart for that. A lot of children are crying, and their wife and their husbands are now because the immigrants took them. I can't do nothing but please open the door for the parents. I'm stuck over there in jail. I'm not going to have nothing. It's the first day of school for me. My dad bought everything for me to live over here. The rent, and I don't know what I'm going to eat. And I'm so lonely right now. I need my dad for me.
For 1 second, put away your opinion about how you feel about this, right? Put away your feeling about whether you want the wall built, you don't want the wall built, all of that. Just put the politics aside because sometimes there is a time to put politics and policy aside and to remember human decency.
Yes.
Right? And you start talking about young kids losing their loved ones and parents. And you said something earlier in that story that we just did before about the candidate whose parents were immigrants and came here and worked hard. Remember, that used to be like an amazing story. Some of our best speeches and talks that we've heard have come from someone saying that my grandfather came here with $5 in their pocket, or they were from this and they were poor. They didn't have things. They worked this many jobs and they didn't become a United States citizen until 25 years later.
Right.
And took all this bunch of money. And so when you hear that, that right there is heartbreaking, man.
Yeah, it's she says, I don't know where I'm going to eat. You know, and it's because her parents are gone, because her dad is gone. It was the first day of school for these kids. This raid had been, according to this article, in the works for over a year, right? They were looking at these places that were hiring people maybe they shouldn't have. They were talking to managers. There's video, audio, all that stuff, right? But what it comes down to for me is these are children. And when you take parents away from children, you're not just punishing the adults who did something wrong in your eyes. You're hurting these kids. Now they have nowhere to go. Luckily, friends and neighbors in the community have stood up and have given them places to sleep and food to eat.
Right.
But, gee, these scars, this fear, these kids didn't go to school whistling a tune thinking the world was fine. A lot of these kids live in this fear constantly. Mm-hmm. That what I know my parents' situation, what's going to happen if they are taken from me any day? That's nothing that a child should have to deal with. And those consequences are going to scar and linger for a long, long time.
You know what I was waiting for in this all of this? Sometimes some news will break like this when it happened on Wednesday. And I purposely have not mentioned this on social media. And I haven't seen anyone mention this. Nowhere in the article of this, this is on CNN, mm-hmm. nowhere have I seen it in talk. What stands out to me is the amount. 680 undocumented workers.
Yeah.
Bad. Okay?
Yeah.
Bad. 18 juveniles. As young as 14 years old working. All of this. And so the conversation is about the illegal immigrants, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what is not in the conversation? The company.
Yeah.
So you you had 680, right?
Yep.
Immigrants were taken away by ICE. So what is the responsibility
yep.
of the factory? Or will the factory get to keep going tomorrow? So there is no punishment for that. That's what stands out to me.
Yeah, that's I thought the same thing. I thought the very same thing. Yelp. Do you use Yelp?
Okay. Don't talk too bad about Yelp. I am a huge Yelper.
Really?
As soon as I leave your place of business, I Yelp. Go check my profile, y'all. Go check my profile. I'm on there. If I go to your business, if you give me good business, Andrew,
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna talk about you. If you give me bad, and by the way, most of mine are good. So I think that's why I'm a good Yelper. Because I'm not a negative person.
That's huge.
I'm a good Yelper.
You're an exception.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay, what I need. I need more good Yelpers.
Yeah. So what you going to say about Yelp?
Well, Yelp is not exactly beloved by a lot of people in the industry.
Okay.
A lot of owners aren't really crazy about Yelp.
Why?
Because it gives people who, you know those kinds of people, that'll complain about a napkin being folded wrong. They go on there, it's one star, it affects their business, right? That kind of thing. So Yelp doesn't have an opt-out. If you own a place, Yelp signs you up to it.
True.
And there's nothing you can do about
True.
It as an owner, right?
True.
And so there's this article in Vice where the author opened up Yelp, typed in the name of his favorite sushi place, and clicked on the phone number. And then two new options popped up.
Okay.
Delivery or takeout is one, or general questions. So he's like, okay. Decides to hit the button, general questions, or excuse me, delivery or takeout. But when the person answered, he had no idea what they were talking about. So he's like, well, what number did I just call? And she said that, oh, it was listed for general questions. General questions should go straight to the restaurant, right?
Sure.
Because you got like, what are your hours? Tell me, so I got a specific question, not just placing an order. Turns out, Yelp is forwarding restaurants' phone numbers to themselves and the service Grubhub. That's owned by Yelp.
Oh,
a food delivery service.
Wait. Grubhub? Wait, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Yelp owns Grubhub?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yelp's partner, Grubhub. Maybe not owned.
Yeah, they're partnered.
But they coexist.
They've partnered for this particular purpose.
Ah.
They didn't even
announce that. They just got together behind closed doors.
There should be no partnership.
No.
There should absolutely be no partnership when it comes to Yelp.
Right. It should be down the middle. You should be able to make your decision. It shouldn't lean you in one way or another.
Right. And I noticed you talked about those who might complain a lot about the napkins. The most important, like I said, I can nerd mm-hmm. out on Yelp. The most important thing when it comes to Yelp are the number of reviews, right? So if you get 200 reviews on this restaurant,
right.
and you keep seeing something about the napkins, they don't give you napkins. You get one napkin. So apparently there's something up.
You can notice patterns, sure. But the problem here is for the owners of these businesses.
I got you.
Grubhub takes a referral fee of 15 to 20% of the total order. Mm. And they have no say. It's not right.
Speaking of not right, the NCAA. I'm going to bore you guys. No, actually, I'm not going to bore you. There's a new NCAA memo right now that requires agents to have a college degree that's intended to protect college players, but it's this whole new rule infuriated LeBron James.
Okay.
Let me explain. The new memo outlines new certification requirements for NBA agents who want to represent players. So players that are in college that are going to go into the NBA draft.
Okay.
In order for you to represent that player as an agent, you now have to have a college degree.
Okay.
This was not the norm before until now. Now, the reason why it tends to be now is because there's an agent by the name of Rich Paul. Rich Paul is the agent for LeBron James.
Okay.
Right now, bottom line, Mace, he's on fire. I mean, he is on fire. Right now in the NBA, he has Anthony Davis, Ben Simmons, Draymond Green, John Wall. He's got the top of the top in the NBA currently.
Okay.
And now he is cornering the market on the underclassmen coming into the NBA, because the reason why Rich Paul is so good at what he does with those coming into the NBA is because he and LeBron James were best friends coming out of high school.
Okay.
So in 2003, when LeBron James went right to the NBA.
From high school.
This is what LeBron James said. Hey, friend, Rich Paul, you don't know anything about this industry. You haven't gone to school for it. But I want you to come and be a part of my agency. They were a part of Creative Artists Agency starting from 2003. And then in 2012, after 9 years of him being around the business, working around that agency, after 9 years, they left in 2012, and Rich Paul started Clutch Sports.
His own agency. Okay.
And his first client is who? His friend, LeBron James. And so now this new rule is something that everybody is frowning upon. You have all of the NBA people coming out saying this isn't fair. Can't believe you're doing this. And the bottom line is, I'll kind of keep it simple. Our world, we are afraid of groundbreakers. We are afraid of people. And so what we want to do is we want to put a stipulation on things like, oh, well, you need to have a degree to do that.
Yeah. What doesn't this guy have? Oh, a degree. Let's make a rule that everyone has to have a degree because he's too good at his job.
Bill Gates got a degree?
No.
What Bill Gates?
College dropout.
Bill Gates got that PhD. That's what I got. I got a PhD.
Is this the NCAA saying we don't want a guy who's going to take kids from high school to pros and circumvent our NCAA
yes.
market?
He's
it's about money,
it's
right?
It's about money.
Always
by the way,
is.
My PhD, I was poor, hungry, and determined. That's what it was, Jacob. You guys have been listening to Tom and Curly. G and Mace. Happy Friday, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Tom and Curly Show. But it's G and Mace from Cairo Knights. We're filling in for those guys. We're just house sitting, not renting or nothing like that. We're not buying in the neighborhood. We're just house sitting is all that we're doing. Means Waters guys is to the show. The Online Training Academy text line, it is 98973. Text us. Say hi to us and add to the show. Coming up at 10:45, we're going to do something called scenarios. We do this at Cairo Knights, and we're going to bring it here. Trust me, Jacob didn't want us to do it, but we're going to do it anyway. We figured you guys can help out with the show. Andrew likes the idea, so everybody else does. So we do that at 10:45. Stick around. It's a little bit of drama, and it's actually listeners that text into our show and has us give our opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Mace,
yeah.
We do a thing called Mace's Story.
Yes.
And Jacob allowed that to come in. So we're going to do Mace's Story. This is a time when you bring up any of your stories that you want.
Yeah, that's right.
Hit us with the Mace's Story.
I slid Jacob a 20, and now we get to do Mace's Story. I picked something in particular to start with that I think represents Cairo Knights and what we try and do with our show, in case anybody who's listening hasn't heard it before.
Okay.
And that is, we try our absolute best to leave the politics aside talk about issues as human beings, and no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, you can hang. You have a seat at the table. We get it done like that on Cairo Nights, right? And the text line is proof of that. We have people from all different angles text in and say, you know, I may disagree, but I like what you guys said. You're good dudes. Mm. And so this story I saw, and it just reminded me of that so much. And that's the fact that we have assumptions about what the other side, let's say, I think there are more than two sides, but for the sake of the story, let's say both sides of politics.
Okay.
And the biggest issue is that we don't really understand things about the other side. And that's been proven in the Journal of Politics. They did a 2017 study and revealed a few interesting things.
Okay.
One is that the average Democrat thinks that more than 40% of Republicans earn more than $250,000 a year.
Can I take a guess? Are you going to give me chances to guess, or are you just going to get all the numbers out?
I'll just give you. I'll just tell you this part. For this part, I'll just tell you the numbers.
Okay.
More than 40% of Republicans earn more than $250,000 a year. That's according to the average Democrat. Meanwhile, Republicans, they think that 40% of Democrats are LGBTQ. Now, how close do you think these guesses are to the truth?
Okay. I'm going to say that the average Republican makes, I'm going to say, of the $250,000 a year, you said?
Yeah. What percentage of Republicans do you think make more than $250,000?
12%.
Okay.
12% of Republicans make $250,000 or more. That's my guess.
The answer is 2%.
Wait, what?
Yep. What percentage of Democrats do you think are LGBTQ?
Well, I would say a lot of them are. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are. I'd probably almost say about 85-90% of them are Democrats. And of that number that are Democrats, I'm going to say they make up 10%?
6%. And Republicans thought it was 40. So there's this perception gap.
Okay.
Right? There's a huge difference between what we think the other side thinks and what they actually do. And you see that all the time in the news. We have, you know, we have CNN and we have Fox News up in the station whenever we do the show. And so many times I see on CNN, they say the right says this or the right thinks this. And then I see on Fox News, the left says this, the left believes this. And it's just not right.
Oh, I'm sorry. You hot right now. You're preaching, and I don't want to stop you because you got me to throw some money into the collection plate, and here's why. That point that you just made about CNN and Fox is a clear example as to what you're talking about with that article. This week, CNN, you have been gross.
Gross.
Fox, you have been gross.
Gross.
Here's why. Because you're not talking about what happened.
Right.
You are continuing to talk about what the other said. I was just talking to a friend of mine last night about CNN and how, like, they think that they're doing this great thing by all these, aha, gotcha, Trump said, and can't believe that, and oh,
right.
My goodness.
Right.
You're trash.
Yes.
I'm calling you trash because you are staying away from the point. Like, stay news. Like, that's what we...
I know.
And it's like this whole thing is like this fake outrage as if you're a conservative or if you're a liberal, as if you're supposed to not get along or anything, right? You're supposed to argue. No, that's not the case. And people say, well, gee, your liberal views on this... Why do you think I'm liberal? Because I'm a brother? Because I can tell you, you know there are some topics.
I can verify. Yeah.
I am a little way right on some topics.
That's true.
So you can't judge based on what someone looks like or where they're from.
When anyone tries to put people into a group, you have to be careful. I'm not saying they're wrong all the time, but it should put up a flag. And if anyone tries to tell you what someone else thinks, don't believe it. They're just trying to rile you up. They're just trying to get ratings. They're just trying to make money. That's how cable news apparently works these days. Mm-hmm. But the facts are in, and we're wrong. We don't understand things. So I hope people can sort of talk to each other a little bit more and really understand what the other side has to say. Story number two, you ready?
What do you got,
buddy? I got a quick one.
All right.
Okay. So in April, mm-hmm. Israel, mm-hmm. they launched a moon lander. Okay?
They did?
Yeah. First privately funded lunar lander attempt in history.
You know, we're missing a lot of news because all of our news is kind of about one thing, about divisiveness in our country.
Right. Well, I'm
so I miss cool things like that.
That's what Mesa Stories is for.
Thank you.
So I say attempt because it didn't go well. The lunar lander crashed on the surface of the moon, and it had a whole bunch of stuff on it, right? A lunar library, which is a DVD-sized archive with 30 million pages of information, mm-hmm. human DNA samples. And one of the things that was on this ship were tardigrades. Do you know what a tardigrade is?
Hell no!
Yeah.
See, that's why you asked. Gee, do you know what that is? No, I don't know what that is.
You set me up to explain. Instead of me just rambling, we get to hear from G.
Okay.
So tardigrades are these little tiny animals, right? They're like microscopic. They're half a millimeter. And they're kind of like little worms, but they look like they're wearing sumo suits. Under the microscope, they're just like puffy and weird, right? Mm-hmm. They're very odd. But they're an amazing little creature because they can survive hotter temperatures than any other living thing. They can survive colder temperatures than any living thing. Even the stuff that survives the heat is normally real bad at cold. Tardigrades can do both spectrums. And they can survive in the vacuum of space. They have found tardigrades that have been what we thought was dead. No water, no food, out there in space, up on a rock.
Right.
And then we give them what they need. We kind of, you know, put the smelling salts under them, and they come right back. So.
Oh, they related to roaches.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
They related,
like alien roaches.
They related to roaches.
Yeah. So what happened on the moon is that when this spaceship, this lunar lander, crashed, mm-hmm. they had a bunch of these tardigrades, or water bears, as they're affectionately called. And so there's a bunch of them running loose on the moon now. So what's going to happen? I don't know. Are we going to have a little, like, tardigrade civilization up there at some point? Not sure. But we'll see.
You remember how earlier you said you was judging folks?
Mm-hmm.
I judged Andrew. Ain't no way in the world I thought he'd play a bump like this.
Yeah!
That's what I'm talking about, Andrew. Ooh-wee. Hey, coming up next, we do scenarios. You cannot leave. If you've never heard scenarios on Cairo Nights, you better stick around and hang out for this. It's a little drama, but it's listener drama. Cairo Nights. Oops, excuse me. Tom and Curly. Happy Friday, everybody. You're listening to Tom and Curly. It's Cairo Knights filling in for Tom and Curly. I'm G. Scott, this is brother Aaron Mason.
Hello.
We're hanging out with you. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we're going to talk a little Seahawks, what we saw with the first preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a guest from 710. She's a Seahawks insider, Stacy Joe.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to come in and hang out with us. And who knows? Maybe, I don't know if Tom and Curly show's ready for Gator.
Oh, is Gator around?
Yeah, we'll see.
Might have to wrangle him in.
Right now, we're going to do what we call scenarios. We do this on Cairo Nights. And let me explain. This comes from listeners to our show that kind of email their concerns or problems. And we kind of go around the horn and kind of try to help navigate
mm-hmm.
and kind of answer the questions. Mm-hmm. You will get that chance as well. When you hear the story, you text in 98973, Online Trading Academy text line, what your thoughts are. Mace, let's get started. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario? Dear G and Mace, my boyfriend does not want to move in together yet. And we have been together for more than 3 years, so it's hardly too soon. I'm getting tired of waiting. I really wanted to be married, but I know that's not going to happen. But I think there should be more of a commitment. He does not know when he will want to. I feel like we are ready to take the next step. We both turned 29, so it's not like we are kids anymore. He's not religious, so he can't use the living together before marriage as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we shouldn't be dating. Maybe he doesn't truly love me or wants to escape. here in the future, here's my question. Will he ever change his mind, or will I just be waiting around for him? How long shall I have to do that? I don't want to just keep stringing this along and be 35, 36 years old in this situation. Please help. 989-73 is Online Trading Academy text line. We got a few minutes to answer this. Brother Mace.
Yeah, I'll be quick. Okay. Boyfriend for 3 years. He doesn't want to move in. I know a lot of people, a lot of adults. Rachel Bell did a story, I think last week, about how more and more older adults specifically are in a relationship, but they live in separate places. I think this is more and more where things are headed, where mm-hmm. a lot of people are. You know, you got your place, you got your setup, you got what you need. And some people aren't so into cohabitating like they used to be. If this is a deal breaker for you, then you really need to sit down and have this conversation and explain, like, listen, this isn't what I want. If this is what you want, then I'm not sure we're compatible.
Jacob, your thoughts on this, sir?
Did she mention marriage at all? Is this something that she wants?
She wants marriage, but the first step is moving in together. She's worried, like, hey, 3 years and we're still not living together.
Uh-huh. I mean, it just depends on how important that is to you. It's a decision she can make it herself, I think. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I've never lived with a partner. It's never felt that necessary to me.
Really?
I think I like having the space to myself. I don't know that I'd mind it. To me, it feels like... personally, not something that's important to me, but if that's something that you really need, I understand.
Andrew, who's running the boards for us, what's up, man?
I think that every single person, I think, has a different opinion on what they think is long enough to have a relationship before moving in with each other. I'm sure that there's people out there who think that 3 is more than enough, and there's some that think that 3 isn't enough. And I think that what the next step is to have an honest conversation about why, what would moving together look like? And what kind of fears they have of moving together, yeah. if there are any, and maybe making a pro and con list. Both parties maybe making a pro and con list as to what's good and bad about moving in together.
I used to laugh at pro and con lists, and let me tell you something. Last week, I made one for the first time for a really difficult decision, and it totally helped me out.
I'm going to go ahead real quick on this. I'll just say, if this is how you want your boyfriend to be, you're not going to change this person.
Right.
So this isn't the person for you. You need to move on and go find someone that does wants to move in within 3 years.
Text line agrees.
Is it good or bad? Who knows? But this is just how they do it. Ah, we're done. Tom and Curly, everybody.